Tonight we're part three of the series. We're going to discuss something that is surprisingly relevant, even though the title doesn't sound that way and the attendance reflects that. The issue of the status of a fetus when the mother converts, you would not think is a major discussion, and nor do you think that it happens all that often, but you'd be surprised. We had left off yesterday discussing the primacy of the Kabbalas HaMitzvahs, that the person who is converting has to accept upon themselves that they will follow the Torah and Mitzvahs. In the event that a child is converting in utero, that becomes tricky. So the Gemara discusses this in Yevamos. It's number one on the source sheet. It says, Amar Rava, Nachris Mu Bereshin Eskaira. A non-Jewish woman who converts, and she is pregnant, b'na ein tzarich tefila. Her son who is born afterward does not have to go to the mikvah. Amai ein tzarich tefila. Why not? V'chitem mishum de Rebbe Yitzchak. Dama Rebbe Yitzchak dvar Torah rubo makbid olav chotzeis. Rubo she'eno makbid olav eino chotzeis. If you tell me that it's because of the halacha I said to Rabbi Yitzchak, what's this talking about? This is talking about a regular trip to the mikvah. So when someone goes to the mikvah, when a woman goes to a mikvah, she has to be touching the water totally. That is what we try to do. However, in the event that there is something on her, so on the daraisa level, on a biblical level, if it's not on the over most of her body, and it's not something that she really cares about, it doesn't bother that it's there, that's not a chatzitza. V'homer of Kana, lo shanu el rubo, avakul chotzitz. So, but that's not going to help us here, because there's something between the fetus and the water, and that is the mother. And is the mother blocking part of the body? No. The fetus isn't going to touch the water at all. So how can you tell me this kid's gone to the mikvah already? Shani uber the hainu revise. So the Gemara says no, there is an exception to the rule. In the event that somebody has a life support system, that life support system does not have to be removed before you go to the mikvah. For example, if a woman has brain surgery, they put in a metal plate, and she's a married woman, she's going to go to the mikvah, we don't tell her, okay, you're going to have to take the plate out before you go to the mikvah. Why? This is part of her body. This is what keeps her alive. So too, the fetus has something that keeps it alive, and that is the mother. The mother is a life support system for the child. If the mother was not there, the child would not survive. So therefore, the mother is not a chatzitza, is not a barrier between the child and the water, and therefore it's as if the child went to the mikvah. Now, what does that sound like? The simple reading of that Gemara is that this child has gone to the mikvah already. I mean, this child has already started the process. It does not, however, it also sounds... What?
How could it start a process before even being created?
So, there's a lot of angles one could take on this. One is, what does this say about abortion? Right? This seems to say that the fetus is its own person. Let's say the child is born and never has a bris. Is that child Jewish? Assuming it's a boy.
Yes.
Why do you say yes?
Because I want to say yes.
Okay, well, if that makes you feel... That wasn't the minute. In our family, but with my children, we don't do circumcision either. We'll get to the hemophiliacs at a later date.
Yeah, but the point is
as follows. Here's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if you're telling me that this child is a convert, so a regular convert who goes to the mikvah, a man, but doesn't have a bris milah, is that person Jewish?
Do they have to have a das if they're doing it? Meaning
they
have to make the decision on their own.
Half Jewish.
Yeah, well.
You'll sell half your chametz to them on Pesach. What? Right, so in general, no, you can't be half Jewish. You can't be half pregnant, you can't be half Jewish. That's the assumption. We might play with those assumptions later tonight. But that the assumption we're dealing with is, no, if you're telling me that this is just part of a process, then this child, if the child doesn't have the bris, it never became Jewish. If a person gives birth to a boy, not non-religious person, never gives the son a bris, is the kid Jewish? Absolutely. Right? Well, yeah, okay, so he's a kid who doesn't have a bris, but he's Jewish. However, if a convert never has a bris, he never went through the process. So that's what it sounds like. Tosus here has an interesting question. Tosus says, wait a second. Tosus, what he likes to do is attach Gemaras from different parts of Shas. So he's going to look at a Gemara in Chulin. That Gemara discusses the concept of Uber Yerech Imo. What does the words Uber Yerech Imo mean? The fetus is a limb of the mother. So that's the question. Is a fetus a limb of the mother or not? So he says it's very interesting because Rava, who this Gemara is based on, Amar Rava, has an opinion there. He says, "Imtel my parach me Rava, ha behedu isle de uber yerech imohu." Rava is the one who holds that a fetus is a limb of the mother. So let me ask you a question. A woman's a convert. She jumps in the mikvah. Her hands get wet. Her feet get wet. Her back gets wet. Do her kidneys get wet? No, kidneys don't. They're a kidney doctor. They don't get wet. Right? Right? Her lungs don't get wet. Her heart doesn't get wet. Does she have a Jewish heart when she comes out? Absolutely. Right? When the body goes in, not only the external organs become Jewish, but even the internal organs. So if you tell me that the fetus is an organ of the mother, so the fetus, just like the rest of the organs became Jewish, this organ should become Jewish as well. And therefore, why are we discussing whether it went into the mikveh, got wet, it didn't get wet? Why are we even having that discussion? Because just like the kidneys are Jewish now and the heart's Jewish, so the baby's Jewish. The baby, according to Rava, is a limb of the mother. So if that's the case, why does the Gemara even have this discussion? So Tosus, a short Tosus, answers, why? The kama hi v'lad anaku hi v'yol, etc. Amarisha rotzul yashir divrei Rava d'hacha afil k'rav Yochanan. Noah wants to show that we follow this according to all opinions. Even to the opinion that says uber lav yerech imo, even according to the opinion that says that the fetus is its own separate entity, still the kid is Jewish. So what comes out as follows. There are two ways of approaching what's going on to this fetus. Either the fetus has become Jewish as a part of the mother, or the fetus is undergoing its own conversion, and that conversion can be started in utero, because even though it can't touch the water, still the mother is not considered a chatzitza, a barrier. So, we have these two opinions. Tosus and Yavamos seems to be saying one way, Tosus and Sanhedrin the other way. One could ask the obvious question, but no matter how you slice it, it comes up peanuts. No matter what you say, the kid's Jewish at the end of the day. What do I care if the kid is Jewish because it's part of the mother and it was born Jewish, or that it was undergoing its own conversion process, and it started inside the mother. If it's a girl, that's it. Right? For a woman, the entire process is going to the mikveh. And if it's a boy, when the boy has the bris on the eighth day, the child will now be Jewish like any other kid. So, the answer is worlds of a difference how you get here.
I think it's a concept of das, because if it's a conversion thing, to some extent, the kid himself or the baby itself has to be accepted, like we discussed yesterday, to accept
correct
Torah mitzvah.
So next thing we're going to talk
onto it, meaning, but if it's something that's where the parents were Jewish, etc., and now the babies weren't under that status, it's already given that status.
Right, so let's flesh that out a little bit more. Let's look at the Avdei Miluim. The Avdei Miluim in number 4 says the Ikra Meidak. Hadikaimon begir katan shmapino so al das bezdin. Let's say you have a kid, this is what we're going to test next time. You adopt a kid from wherever. The kid's not Jewish. So now you're going to take the kid, you make the kid Jewish. We will discuss that at the age of majority, meaning when that girl is 12 years old or that boy is 13 years old, they will have an option of opting out. They can say, why? We'll discuss it. I never wanted this. So this child that was born from the mother who converted, does this child have an option of opting out? What would you say?
I would say no.
Why?
The mother is Jewish when the child is born, so he's not an adopted child. He is Jewish when he's born.
So if you tell me that, yeah, the child is a part of the mother,
right?
Therefore, the child was born Jewish. Sorry, you're stuck like the rest of us. Mm-hmm. However, if you tell me that, no, this child just began a conversion process in utero, and perhaps it was completed afterwards, then that child's a convert like anyone else. So that's what the Avnei Miluim says.
When she was pregnant, she didn't finish her conversion?
No, the woman gets pregnant, right? Finds God, 5 months of pregnancy, she goes and she converts. Okay? Now, if you tell me that the child that will be born is born of Jewish mother, and therefore the child is Jewish because it is a part of the mother.
From the conception, wasn't it?
What?
From the conception.
The conception was not Jewish. Again, we'll discuss that all more. Right? So this is a case where the child was conceived by a non-Jewish mother. But a Jewish mother gave birth. So, the question is, what's the status? And that has to do with, well, how are we viewing this kid's, how he became Jewish? Did he become Jewish as born Jewish because he was part of a Jewish mother? Or no, he also underwent a conversion process and that only began at a later date. I'll tell you, I'll give you an example. This was one of the all-time great cases in the Beis Din. This goes back a few years. A couple comes to the Beis Din. They're married. She is very pregnant at this point, seventh, eighth month. And they say that, you know, he's Jewish, she's not. And they've done some reading, etc. He's becoming more religious and she wants to convert. So the first thing the Beis Din says is, make sure you got your facts right. How are you so sure that you're Jewish? How are you so sure you're not Jewish? Let's first look into it. Let's make sure you got it right. So they looked into it, and in fact, they got it right that she was a guy, l'mahadrin, right? Everyone would check off on her, no doubt about it. He was Jewish, but he had a little bit of a problem. He was a Suffolk mamzer. What's a Suffolk mamzer? So in the event that a married woman, for example, has a child with someone other than her husband, that child has the status of mamzer. That child is not allowed to marry anybody except for another mamzer or a convert or a shifcha. A shifcha is a shifcha kananis, meaning a non-Jewish woman who was taken in as a maidservant. And even if he marries one of those people, his children will be mamzerim as well. So, the question is, what do we advise these people? So what about the child right now? The child right now that she's pregnant with will not be affected by anything we do. Because for sure, that child is not related to the father. If a non-Jewish woman has a child with a Jewish man, there's no relationship between the child and the father, even if the child converts. So that child is okay. What about the next child? Let's play the game, what if she does convert? What if she doesn't convert? If she doesn't convert, the next child is not Jewish. If she does convert, the next child is Jewish, but a Suffolk mamzer. Not Jewish, we can fix. Suffolk mamzer, not so much. So on the other hand, so logically, what would you tell them to do? Okay, so you tell them don't convert. So as a matter of Bayesian policy, we don't support intermarriage. Unlike other sections of the greater Jewish community that might have different views on it, we in the Orthodox camp do not support intermarriage. So therefore, to tell her not to convert and to remain married to this Jewish guy, that's not an option either. So this was a tough one. So there is a Mishnah in Kedushin. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Yecholim Mamzerim Lihitoyer. Rabbi Tarfon says that a mamzer can unmamzer himself. How do you do that? So there's a concept of Havlad Holech Acher Hapogum. If two people get married, the status of the child is one who has the lower status. Now, mamzer is a pretty low status. Mamzer and Shifcha, Kenanis, who's a lower status? So Rabbi Tarfon says the Shifcha is a lower status. So if a mamzer marries a Shifcha, the child will be an Evan. So he says, I've got an idea. Go marry a Shifcha. You have little Avadim. And you can free your Avadim. They'll be regular Jews. And eventually your wife will stop having children. You free her also. So there aren't too many Shifchas around.
Status wouldn't change in that case.
What?
Ah,
but here's the story. If we tell her convert as a Shifcha,
yeah,
then her next child will be an Eved.
That I understood.
So therefore, we can have her eat cake and eat it too. We can have her convert.
So she'll be fine and her kids will be fine, but I'm saying the husband will live.
But it doesn't matter. Well, his husband has a wife and then children. What does he care that he's a mamzer?
Right.
So that was the original suggestion. There is a major Machokas, there's an RJJ article on this, as to whether this works nowadays. Rav Soloveitchik famously said, once Lincoln freed the slaves, there's no more Shifcha. Meaning that there's no status of that anymore. But Moshe Feinstein, it seems, disagreed. And supposedly he has in his day, either he had or he had other people, arrange this type of situation in order to let Mamzerim get out of the problem. However, this wasn't going to work either. Why not? Because this guy wasn't the mamzer. What was he?
Suffolk.
He was a Suffolk mamzer, which means that maybe he's not a mamzer. And if he's not a mamzer, he can't marry a Shifcha. So we're back and we're stuck again. So Svi Sabalovsky came up with a great idea. The Pischei Tshuva quotes this, that David HaMelech, he was the son of Yishai. Yishai, we know, is one of the people who died and never had any sins. So Yishai at one point, so it's very strange, the Medrash says. If anyone knows a little bit about Navi, when it comes time for Shmuel to pick the king, he goes to Yishai, he says, it's one of your sons. Yishai marches out his seven sons, not one, not two, not three, not seven. Then he says to Yishai, we got a problem here. One of your sons is the king, and it ain't any of these guys. So he says, I got one more. So he pulls out David HaMelech, it's a winner. So the Medrash asks, let's say he didn't think much of David, but he should have made the top eight at least. I put him at the end of the line, but put him on line. So the Medrash tells a wild story. Right? This Medrash can actually be found in the Sefer Todah on Shavuos. The Medrash says that Yishai was the son of Oved, was the son of Rus and Boaz. Originally, going back to the story of Shavuos, when Rus wanted to marry in, people weren't so excited about it. Why? Because the Torah tells us the people from Moab can't convert. And Boaz says, I have a tradition that's only on the males. A lot of people weren't that excited about it. Boaz says, I'll show you. He marries Rus, and what happens? He died that night. So everyone said, yeah, of course he died. He wasn't supposed to marry the woman. He married the woman and God killed him. So the grandson Yishai gets concerned. He says, well, maybe I am a Moavi then. And if I am a Moavi, I shouldn't keep living with my wife. So therefore he stops living with his wife. But then he says, you know what? It's not right that a man should go without a wife. I'm going to go marry my shifcha. So he calls in the shifcha and says to her, you know, I think we're going to get married. But he says, wait a second. Maybe I'm not a Moavi, and then I can't marry a shifcha. So he calls in the shifcha. He says, here's the deal. If I am a Moavi, then you're still a shifcha. However, if I am not a Moavi, here's your get shichra, and you can go free. Now we're getting married. Because one way or the other, we can marry each other. The shifcha is very taken aback, goes to Mrs. Yishai and says, Mrs. Yishai, what's going on here? He says, I'll tell you what's going on here. My husband's gone nuts. He's gotten way too firm for his own good. Forget it. Tonight when he thinks you're going to be with him, I'm going in. Mrs. Yishai goes in, she gets pregnant. Yishai says, whoa, what's going on here? I know I haven't lived with my wife for months. She's pregnant. This isn't immaculate. What's the status of this child that's going to be born? Mamzer. What are we going to do about it? So that's why David gets sent out to be a shepherd. To live with to figure the lions will eat him. Whatever. This isn't my son. It's not until Shmuel comes around and says, there's another son out there. There's a dawn upon Yishai that David is his son. Great Medrash explains Shmuel. But it also helps us. Well, what should we do here? We should make her into a shifcha. And he should be her adon. And he should say, I'm now freeing you on condition. If I am not a mamzer, you are free. If I am a mamzer, you are not free. Then they can get married. And what will the status of the children be? What? There'll be suffik avadim. And he could just free them, and that'll be the end of it. So boy, we were excited. This is like a based in dream. Not only do you get to make a shifcha, but then you get to do a get shichur. And not only that, but to get shichur al tanai. We were living the dream until every party needs a pooper.
But wait a minute, how do you make somebody a shifcha?
So when you go to the mikvah, instead of saying that you're being megayer l'shem yadus, you're megayer l'shem shifchus. Right? That's all what it is. It was all good. We were all excited until Rav Yashav of Rav Shalom came down and he announced that he actually knows the family and the guy's not a mamzer. So there went all the fun. But the woman gave birth beforehand, etc. But that was it, one of these cases we had of a pregnant Gioris. The woman gave birth, she converted, and they lived happily ever after. It was one of the fascinating parts of it is, you know, this guy, she had studied a lot for conversion. He was not that knowledgeable. So after she converted, they had to get married again. So we go there, we're explaining the ceremony. He knows the ceremony inside out and backwards. So we said, how do you know this? He said, I'm a photographer. I've seen hundreds of Jewish weddings. This I know. So that is one nafkamina. The achronim give many, many differences between one or the other. Just to throw out another one off the cuff, a woman's pregnant, she gives birth to a boy. When does that boy have a bris? If you tell me that child is born Jewish, that child's going to have a bris on the eighth day. And if the eighth day is Shabbos, he's going to have it on the eighth day. If you tell me this child is not Jewish, it has just begun a process by going to the mikvah. What?
It has to be a nidcha.
No, it doesn't have to. It has to be a nidcha if it falls down on Shabbos. Yeah. But it could be a muktam also. You can do it on the third day if you want.
Right, there's no
status. Right, there's no idea of eighth day. You can do it on the eighth day, the ninth day, the tenth day, the third day, the fourth day. Right, that's the question of what are you doing it for. The Aruch HaShulchan has the discussion as well as to whether it's Uber Yerech Emo or not. And he quotes the famous Dogma Ravava. This is actually practical. When a Beis Din is converting someone, this might sound obvious, they have to know that they're doing it. So if a pregnant woman goes into the mikvah, let's say she's early in the pregnancy. So the Dogma Ravava says the Beis Din has to know that she's pregnant. They have to realize that they're not doing one conversion, they're doing two conversions. And if the Beis Din is unaware of it, then it's not going to work. Now that's, of course, only if assuming that you're doing two conversions. If you tell me that the child is part of the mother, you're only doing one conversion, they don't have to know about it. Last year I had a case of a pregnant woman who converted, and this was a fascinating case. So a woman had had a non-Orthodox conversion, and it was very questionable, meaning it wasn't one of these for sure, it's no good. It was a Beis Din of three men. She actually kept Shabbos afterwards. Then she moved to Israel and she stopped keeping Torah mitzvahs. Now she moved back to New York and she met this guy, and you know, that's the story. And now she's pregnant and she's trying to figure out if she has to convert again. So I'm driving to meet this lady. I'm sitting with one of the other dayanim. I said, well, let's figure this out. There are two possibilities here. Either her first conversion was good, or we're going to have to do another conversion here. What's the difference? What are the practical differences based on what our decision is about the first one? So I say, you know what one of the practical differences are? Whether this child is related to the father. If the first conversion was good, then she was a Jewish woman who married a Jewish man, and the Jewish man's having a child. If the first conversion was no good, she's a non-Jewish woman who's marrying a Jewish man, and the child's not related. So I said, for example, if the father is a Levi, and they have a boy, will this child be a Levi or not? Okay. So we sit down, we get the whole story from them, etc. And then as they're walking out, I say to the guy, can I ask you one question? You wouldn't happen to be a Kohen or a Levi, would you? To which he said, I'm a Cholol. To which Rabbi Wilk, when the other said, everybody sit down. We're not going anywhere. So what was the story? So he says that he grew up in Yerushalayim. He got at his bar mitzvah, he got kohen, and he duchened every day. Until at one point, his mother told him, no, it was his aunt, his mother's brother's wife, who's totally not religious, told him that when his mother was in college, she slept with a non-Jewish man. Now, in the event a woman sleeps with a non-Jewish man, she can then not marry a Kohen. And if she does marry a Kohen, the children lose Kohen status. So he said, therefore I'm a Cholol. But wait a second, this is a very convenient Cholol, see. Because if the guy wasn't a Cholol, then he couldn't marry her. And we couldn't convert her. Because if she's converting with the intention of marrying him, that means she's not accepting one of the mitzvahs. She's not accepting the issur of a kohen to marry a giyaris. So we said, so this is a hard one, because the only proof we have is you have a woman who's not religious, who's related, telling us this story. So yeah, well, we said, well, what about your father? Where does he live? He lives in Yerushalayim. Does he dochen? Every day. Does he take the first liya? Yes. So this was a case of cholol l'kula. Usually you'll have a situation where, you know, the people are trying to get out of the cholol, so they, you know, really maybe the woman wasn't, maybe she isn't, we can't believe it. This is the guy who's trying to make himself a cholol for the sake of it. So it's a very interesting question. Eventually, the mother actually called in the Beis Din and she fessed up. That itself is still a question. Who says we believe her? But in the end, the psak was we do. What?
Husband maybe never knew. That's why he was still doing everything he was doing. Meaning he's getting the aliyahs, etc.
It's hard to imagine that they told the kids and not the husband. It was a very tricky question. So Rav Yoshev, I'll mention him again, Zechet Tzadik Levracha, has a well-known tshuva, it's published, where he writes that if a woman goes to secular college, there's no assumption at the wedding that she's a basula. Very strong comment by him. However, this woman went to college in the 1960s, and things were different then, and she went to an all-female college. So, you know, she was dating a non-Jewish man, could mean they went out for soda pop, and then they went to a movie or something. You know, things have changed over those years. So it was really far from a simple case whatsoever. The bottom line is it went through. And the woman was sitting in the mikveh, and I had to ask her the following question based on this. I said, this is an odd question, but you've gone for a sonogram? He said, yes. He said, do you know if you're having twins? Because according to the same surah, according to the Dagal Meravava, if you've got to know what you're doing, you have to know if you're doing one conversion, two conversions, or in the case of twins, you could be doing three conversions at once. So she said, it's only one, it's a boy. Mazel tov. Hopefully the child's doing well. So that is another nafka mina. The Beis Yosef raises the following issue. What if it is twins? Are the brothers related to each other? No? Anybody?
No.
Why not? Ramalot?
Depends again.
So the assumption is, you might say, it depends, correct? But the same thing. If the convert's not related to each other, they're both born from a Jewish mother, then they are related. That's not so simple. Because the Shach says it's a Dover Poshet, that of course they're related. So that answers everything. Not necessarily, because there's a very basic question on the original Geirus. So again, we come to Har Sinai. Before Har Sinai, we're not Jewish, now we all became Jewish. Geirus Shiginuskaya Katan Shnola Dami. So it should be, what would be the first thing that should happen after the Matan Torah? There should be a lot of weddings, because me and my wife aren't married anymore. And I'm not related to my brother, and I'm not related to my parents, I'm not related to anybody. We all should be converts at this point. So how come this piece is missing? So Rav Soloveitchik has the following idea. What? Correct. He said the reason that you can't have familial relationships going through a geirus, because there's at some point, you know, they'll jump in one at a time, there is some point in here where one of them is Jewish and one of them is not. And a Jew and a non-Jew cannot be related. So therefore, even when the next one becomes Jewish, the relationship has been broken already. Here at Matan Torah, where everyone became Jewish at the same time, there was no break. And therefore, they all remain related. Based on this, Rav Soloveitchik has a little bit of a chiddush related to mikvahs. So the way a mikvah is set up is there's, let's say, a bor hashaka, or bor zriya, and you've got the regular bor. So when you go into a mikvah, you're not jumping into the rainwater. You're jumping into regular water, which through the halachic principle of electricity is becoming mikvah water because there is a pipe somehow attaching it. And what this allows the mikvah to do is you can close the pipe, drain it, clean it, and refill it, and you don't have to wait for it to rain again. Rav Soloveitchik suggested as follows. If you would have the plug in, meaning that this is not a kosher mikvah, and you tell two brothers, go into the mikveh at the same time and get under the water. And when they're both underwater, you pull the plug, then they could still remain related, theoretically. Because there would not be a point where they weren't unrelated. So whether that's true or not is questionable. However, it is definitely true that even if these two brothers were converts, they converted at the same exact time. They were in the same mother. So one could argue that at least the beginning of it, that the mikvah was together, because of that, this might not prove anything. The Dvar Avram, we'll just mention it quickly, number 8 here, raises the possibility of that which we thought was impossible, and that is someone being half Jewish. The Dvar Avram has this chiddush that that the amount of time the child is in the mother. It went to the point that he's in a Jewish mother, he's Jewish, and the point that he's not Jewish mother, he's not Jewish. And he uses this to explain a bunch of answers. This is also probably not likely. There are many, many other nafkaminas. Is the child related to the mother? Right? If the mother dies, is it automatic that this child inherits the mother? Another question asks that this is related to, etc., etc. Of all these nafkaminas, there is one very, very, very practical nafkamina nowadays, which really is out of the blue. It's interesting how technology, we're living in a world where science fiction becomes science in record time. And therefore, there's always a question, how does the Torah keep up with it? So obviously, artificial reproductive technologies are on the cutting edge of technology nowadays. And it is not uncommon at all for children to be born nowadays through either surrogate motherhood or through donor eggs. Little background for people who might not be familiar. there are women who can't give birth for various reasons. One reason that a woman might not be able to give birth is because of egg quality, right? Particularly with women, as they age, the quality of their eggs gets lower, and therefore the odds of the egg becoming fertilized becomes less and less. Or another possibility that the woman has lovely eggs, fine eggs. However, there's a uterine problem. Her eggs can be fertilized, but her body cannot carry the baby for the requisite amount of time. Technology today has taken care of both of those problems. For the woman who has the first problem, you have something called donor eggs. You go and you can, for a few $1,000s, you get a younger woman to give eggs. You take the eggs and you mix them with the sperm of the husband. You put it into the mother. 9 months later, done. For the woman who has the incompetent uterus, you take her eggs. You mix it with the sperm of the husband. Biologically, you'll have a child of theirs. You send it to the surrogate mother. This is, my favorite Hebrew word. How do you say surrogate mother in Hebrew? Em pundakit. What is it, pundak? An inn, right? It's a motel, you know? So it checks in, the mother carries it. It's a great word. There you go, 9 months later. Now you've got a problem. Are you my mother? What's the story nowadays? Is the mother what we call the biological mother, the woman who provided the DNA, the biological material? Or is the mother the gestational mother, the mother that carried it? And this is a major issue. The courts haven't a clue. That many states have just tried to shut the whole thing down, because what's going to happen? Husband and wife get a surrogate mother. The surrogate mother, after 9 months, says, it's my baby, I don't want to give it up. So you say, well, we have a contract. A contract to sell your children is illegal. It's not a binding contract. This is originally the Baby M case. In fact, my favorite case was a case that had to happen in California. It did happen in California, where there was a case where there were six parents. A couple decided they wanted to have a child, so she got an egg donor, he got a sperm donor, they mixed it together and they put it into a surrogate mother. 9 months later, the child is born, and the original couple has broken up by now. They don't want the kid anymore. So they don't want the kid. The egg donor doesn't want the kid. The sperm donor doesn't want the kid. The surrogate doesn't want the kid. The guy who's married to the surrogate doesn't want the kid. California. Six potential parents here. No one wants the kid. No one wants to pay the bills. So what does halacha say about this? This is very, very real. These cases happen with a fair amount of regularity. In fact, I remember 1 week in the Beis Din, there were back-to-back cases which could not live with one another. The first case, both of them were not good cases. The first was a case of a woman who gave birth to a child with Turner syndrome. You know what Turner syndrome is? Turner syndrome is a chromosomal abnormality, correct? And among the practical differences is a girl born with Turner syndrome is born with no eggs. And unlike men who produce sperm throughout their lives, women are born with all the eggs they're ever going to have. If they're born with zero eggs, they're going to end up, they'll never have a child. You can tell from the time they're born. The mother comes forward, a woman was in her low 30s, and she said, I would like to freeze my eggs and save them for my daughter. That in 20, 30 years from now, when she's ready to get married. So they will take her husband's sperm, mix it with my eggs. Biologically, the child will be very similar to my daughter, and then she'll carry to gestation. Is that allowed? Question.
With her husband.
Right, correct. The son-in-law.
With the mother.
Right. So again, you have that biologically, this is a
child. The grandmother are both the mother.
What? Load all over again. So that's case number one. Case number two is a situation where a woman has multiple miscarriages, and they tell her, you've got to go get a surrogate. In the state of New York, they do not look kindly upon surrogacy. However, what they do say is that if you can provide a surrogate who we know will not argue the case, then we'll go forward. How are you going to find a surrogate like that? A close relative. So, the husband's mother says, I will carry the baby for you. Is that allowed? So, there are two possibilities. Possibility number one is that the biological mother is the mother. Possibility number two is the gestational mother is the mother. If the biological mother is the mother, then the mother, in the second case, can carry the baby because she's not a mother. Right? The mother is the wife who provided the eggs. However, in the first case, you cannot donate the eggs because then the woman will be having a child with her son-in-law. If you tell me it's the gestational mother, you've got the exact opposite. In the first case, it's allowed. In the second case, it's usher. So how do you decide a case like this? Where in the Gemara are you going to turn to figure out whether for the entire history up until pretty recently, the biological and the gestational mother was the same person? So the answer people point to is this Gemara over here of Mubarshanus Gaira. A woman is pregnant and she converts. That child is Jewish. Why is that child Jewish? Two possibilities we keep on saying. Either that child is a part of the mother, or the child is a separate entity which converted. This happens to be the oddball case of one woman convert. This child was conceived by a non-Jewish woman, and a Jewish woman gave birth to this child. And now, is this child Jewish? Two possibilities. Either yes, because he who is born from Jewish mother is Jewish, or no, this child can begin a conversion process, but if it was conceived by a non-Jewish woman, it's not Jewish. One could turn around and say, this is the question we're dealing with, because conceived by means biological mother. The egg is what matters. And therefore, yeah, this kid could be Jewish because it underwent a conversion. Or, if you tell me that the child, that Uber Yerech Imo, it is born, whoever it is born of makes it Jewish, therefore it's a matter of the gestational mother. It doesn't matter where the egg is from, it matters where the kid came out of. This has wide, wide-reaching nafkaminas. I'll just end with a quick one, a cute one. I was actually driving, this goes back a few years, with Michael Broyd someplace. It was Yonah Reese's wedding. I was driving him back from Muncie. And I'm driving, I said to him, no, Michael, what are you up to? So he says he's working on cloning. Cloning is, oh yeah, very nice. So we're talking, he tells me that there is a rumor that's floating, that since surrogacy makes so much trouble because the surrogate might ask for the child, they're working, and perhaps they've already invented a way, to manipulate the hormones of a cow that it could carry a human baby. Meaning that what you're going to do is you're going to take the sperm, the egg, and put it together, plunk it into the par pundakit for the requisite amount of time, and then when time is ready, you do a C-section, you take the kid out. He said, so the question is as follows. If you take a Jewish fetus and you put it in a cow, what's the status? Is it Jewish or is it fleshix? that's the big question they're dealing with. So these questions go on, but it's very fascinating that you see the Chochmas HaTorah, that you know that this machokes, which is an important machokes unto itself, really carries with it such deep, deep understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that thousands of years from now, this is what it's going to come down to. It's very interesting. All right, we'll continue next time.